Tonight, Mark Carman weighs in on Michael Jordan's recent statement on violence. Then, State Representative Robert Martwick joins Patty in studio. Kelly Ahlstrom plays for New Music Mondays, and we give someone a wake-up call. All that and more on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Oh, man, so much to talk about. There is quite a bit to talk about, and obviously the Democratic National Convention started today. There was drama there, and we're going to check in with Representative Sarah Feigenholz as well. We're adding to the show at 11:15, and we have a social justice crusader. I call him crusader because I just think that I feel like he should be wearing a cape. Todd Belcour, whose post you shared on your Facebook page. When you posted that, I was in the car and started texting him. I'm like, yeah, I think he needs to come in studio and talk a little bit about that, because he was previously a Bernie supporter, not a big fan of Hillary's, and I wanted to get his thoughts on that. He posted something. He's very eloquent. When we've had him on the phone before, he gets very verbose, and I enjoy that. And I ramble, and he is he's speechy. Would you say speechy? Is that a word, Elif? Would you say?
I think it works.
Speechy?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I prattle. I'm a prattler. He's a speecher.
Does that make sense? That works.
So tonight was the very first night. There was some conflict earlier in the day, especially when it came to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who has stepped down as the head of the DNC. She will resign at the end of the week. She did not gavel in, which is kind of the official start. She's been given an honorary chair in Hillary's campaign, which a lot of people also were disappointed by. So boring to the kids out on Michigan Avenue, I'll bet. You don't want to hear about politics, do you? You're out and having a good time on Michigan Avenue. Let me see if I can turn this on for you. Where are you folks from?
Mexico.
Ah, viva la raza. I'm sorry. Viva Mexico. ¿De dónde eres en Mexico?
Monterrey.
Oh, Monterrey. Qué bonita en Monterrey. Mi mamá es de Villa Acuña en Coahuila.
Oh, Coahuila.
Yeah, sí. You didn't think that was going to happen, did you? That's all the Spanish I have. I apologize to everyone involved.
That's good.
What brings you to Chicago?
Just visiting.
Have you been to Chicago before?
No. Us three, no.
What do you think of our city? What do you think, young man?
Beautiful.
¿Qué piensas de Chicago? ¿Te gustas? Huh?
Very fun.
Divertido. Yeah. That's all I got. I got a couple words here and there. What's your favorite thing so far?
¿Qué te ha gustado más?
¿La comida?
No.
No. ¿Personas? ¿De gente?
The view.
The view? Yeah. Our buildings, edificios, ¿sí?
Yeah, the skyline. Yeah.
Oh. ¿Cómo se dice skyline in Spanish? No, I don't know either.
El skyline.
We all learned a Spanish word. El skyline.
Las luces de la ciudad.
Oh, las luces. Yeah, me gusta también. Es qué bonito. Qué bonito. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great night, everybody. Thank you. Come on, Ez. How nice was that?
That was adorable.
I should have taken a selfie with them.
That was too cute.
That was really cute.
I thought your Spanish was great.
It's really terrible.
I don't know any Spanish.
Ask Esmeralda. She's like...
By the way, I love El Skyline.
El Skyline.
And then you got to say it with El Skyline.
Everyone, when you come into Chicago, just remember, you got to check out our El Skyline. It is beautiful. It's a great night. It's a little muggy out, but man, that was very sweet. And they came to Chicago. You forget that this is a destination for people all over the world. This is, I think that we are a gem in this country. You know, when you go to New York and LA, they sort of look down on us. And I never understand that, because I've been to their towns. I've seen your stuff. I've eaten your food. I've met your people. It does not get better than Chicago. And the people of Mexico just told us that.
Yeah, and I've heard that our people are much friendlier than New York or LA's people.
When you go to New York and you smile, they think you're stupid for smiling. Like, I've had friends tell me that they don't understand why Chicagoans smile so much. They think that we're stupid. Like, it makes us vulnerable.
Yeah.
For me, like, my smile actually protects you. If I'm not smiling, that's when you should be afraid of your safety. But
life-threatening. Hashtag.
Patty's not smiling. What's wrong? So, yeah, it is. And in L.A., I mean, everyone's just so chill. And I think because they aren't challenged with the weather, you know, the climate is so temperate all the time. I think that they're so mellow. They're kind of like everything is kind of sort of they move in a very glidey way. But like, that's why they drive so slowly. Like, they're not in a hurry to get anywhere. They have no sense of urgency.
Right.
That's what it is, because they have the challenges of either the climate or, you know, the view. They've got the ocean. They can go. They have different options. They can go to the mountain. They can go skiing. They can go to the ocean. Here, it's kind of like, we got to work for it.
Maybe, right? Do they have so much traffic that they have to just be like, you know what? I'm just going to sit here.
And they do. They have no sense of physics either, right? They don't realize that two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time.
That's funny.
Because they'll try to, like, you'll see two people, like, merging, and, like, no, like, you know how we swerve? Like, you see someone coming into the lane that you wanted, and you merge immediately, like, jerk your car over. And you both, generally, like, both cars kind of realize it at the last second. Because there is, I can't remember which one has the right of way, but usually, I've always noticed people seem to be aware of it at the same time. In LA, like, they get very close and they just kind of go, oh, I guess they're there. And then they just kind of swerve back, just very, like, casually. Like, I guess I'm not going that way now.
So they're in their own world.
So totally in their own. They're so high. I can't tell you how many people I know that drive high. Like, I'll be in their car and they just they take their one hitter. And I'm like, I don't understand what's happening right now. I'll go into business meetings. This is one of the reasons why, when people ask me why I never moved to LA, I had a business partner years ago who would take a hit in the car. And it was skunk weed. And we'd be in the elevator and all you could smell was the skunk weed on him. And I thought, yeah, we're not going to make it. We're not going to sell anything today. So they're all high in traffic. They're high, and they got no place to be, and they're very hungry. Okay, what do we have on the show? Coming up after this break, we're going to talk to Representative Sarah Feigenholz. I think that the first night of the Democratic National Convention is worth conversation. I want to hear what she has to think. She was on the floor. We'll hear from Brandon Weatherby tomorrow night. I know that he's on his way there. There's a slim possibility that I get to go, Esmeralda. And then when we were talking about it, yeah, they said they might have a room for me. So
I'm taking the WGN van?
I might have. What did you just do?
You taking the fan van?
Esmeralda.
Good luck.
Why? You don't think they'll let me take it to Philadelphia?
I don't know.
Okay,
let me
pull up my Google Maps.
It's very far.
I'm going to pull up my Google Maps. I could sleep in the van. If I just clear out, I'm not even kidding. All I got to do is clear out some of the stuff. There's like a ladder and some tables back there. I get myself an air mattress, right?
And sure.
There's plenty of people I know that are there. I'm sure they'll let me shower and like freshen up a little bit. But as I didn't even think about taking the fan van. I was going to take a train.
You do you.
I'm not saying you said to do it. It's your suggestion. It's completely on me. I am so excited right now. The fan van's going to Philly. More after this on 720 WGN. You know, not for the DNC, but for the 150th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. That's why. And the DNC. I want to drive to Philly. I'm ready to get in a van. I saw some pictures from the floor of the convention, and Representative Sarah Feigenholz, who had pictures of Sarah Silverman on stage and Michelle Obama, and it looks like you're having a little bit of fun, Representative Feigenholz. I'm not going to lie to you.
You know, Patty, it's always great to be on your show. I couldn't believe you weren't going to be here in Philadelphia. I'm so bummed out because, you know, you're such a great reporter and you have your own style. And in absentia, I thought I'd put on my best Patty Vasquez.
I am so thrilled. Well, I've seen several selfies that were very nice, as a matter of fact. And you had some great posts and pictures of, again, Sarah Silverman, very funny. But I have to say, she seemed to have still ticked off some of the Bernie supporters, which how present, how loud, how vocal are they being on the floor, the Bernie supporters?
Well, the Illinois delegation is stage right. On the floor, like very close to the steps. So it's Arkansas, and then we're kind of behind Arkansas to the left. And behind Illinois, kind of as you go up the grade, is the state of California. And the state of California seems to have a very loud contingent of, I don't necessarily want to call them Bernie supporters, but they're just really unhappy with the process. And so they were disruptive. It's a convention. This is what happens at conventions. But I think that, you know, Hillary Clinton for a lot of people is going to be a destination. I am not one of those people. She was my first pick because I believe that she is the most qualified for the job. But I think that Bernie delivered a very loud and clear message at the end of this convention, the first night, that basically said, there's only one person who can be president of the United States, and we must elect Hillary Clinton. And that was the mic drop. That's this is the beginning. I mean, I think that, you know, this is, there is a stark, stark difference between the two nominees, presumptive nominees. And I think that once the dust settles on Bernie, who I feel has contributed enormously to the process, and he has pulled our party into, I mean, he, you know, fearless about talking about minimum wage, fearless about talking about college for families who are earning less than $125,000. I mean, these are real problems in our country, and he had the courage to bring these issues up and to discuss them in the platform and to push the party a little bit to the left for the 99%.
Well, what do you say to people? Because, you know, a big reason why Bernie got so much support was, you know, distancing himself from, let's say, and accusing Hillary Clinton of being in the pocket of Wall Street, of wanting to have, you know, free higher education. A lot of things that, a lot of people were drawn to and said, yeah, we need a radical change. I mean, that's what's coming from the right as well. Something radical has to happen. And we've heard a lot of that. You know, how much can we bring people in? How much can people be brought in from either the Republican side or the Democratic side if, you know, we're so far apart fundamentally when it comes to what's wrong with this country, right? Because if you listen to the Republicans, it's that we're vulnerable to immigrants, that we're vulnerable to ISIS, that we are, that the, you know, working class is already, the minimum wage is already too high and the state should have the right to lower that. It's not about the minimum wage. And when the left seems to be about, look, the top 1% owns more than half of the rest of the 90%. I don't even know I can't do the math on it. I was trying to track Bernie's numbers and it didn't seem to add up. But, you know, it seems like we are blaming, you know, one side blames the corporations and the other side blames immigrants and welfare system and things like that. And I've asked you a lot of questions. What is the sort of, how do we bring those two disparate groups at least somewhere close to the middle?
Well, I mean, I think that we have to listen.
Yes. Do you guys want to listen or no? You're already bored. Look at the people on Michigan Avenue. Like, we're so bored. We can't. Hold on. Representative Feigenholz, we have people on the street. Let me see where they are. Let's see. Are you going to vote in this election in the fall? Wait, what do you mean? What's keeping you away from voting?
I was born in a different country, so I can't vote.
But you're not a registered vote. Do you live here?
I do, but I'm not a citizen of these United States.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm going to vote. It's going to be a tough vote, though.
That's the same thing. I'll vote.
I'm not going to set aside my choice to vote. But,
right. But you're disappointed in your choices.
Totally disappointed. Yeah.
What is the thing that's driving you away the most? Because people will say, and I'll help you out a little bit if you want. I don't mean to put any words in your mouth.
Totally.
Some people think that Trump is too strident and angry and hate mongering, and that Hillary is a liar and can't be trusted.
Totally. I think
both. You believe all of those things of both.
I mean, I think those are strong words. I it's hard for me to morally get behind one of those candidates, and it's hard for me policy-wise to get behind one of those candidates.
Okay, so fair enough. Yeah. Representative Feigenholz, what do you say when people say that they can't get behind somebody, in particular Hillary Clinton, when they say that she has misled the American people when it comes to either her emails or Benghazi?
You know, I have to say that these are very, very complicated questions, Patty.
Sure.
And I think that the media has stoked the flames of, and has done a great job, obviously, from the response that you got from one of your, are you really, like, out on the sidewalk?
And yeah, they're outside listening to the show. They're listening to your response right now. I know, is that too, you're...
I think it's a distraction that a lot of voters have, they've taken the bait on it. I think that people make mistakes with their emails all the time. You know, and I'm one of them. You know,
Colin Powell and Madeleine Albright have also said that they were doing the same things. And I always wondered if the FBI didn't push forward, because when you pull that thread, how far back do you go? How far back do you expose the vulnerabilities and the things that were being perpetrated in our Defense Department? That's just my own.
You know, Patty, the truth is that there are pollsters who are testing messages, but behind the scenes and behind the curtains. So they have 10 things that somebody says about Donald Trump or 10 things that somebody says about Hillary Clinton, and it moves the needle. And if it moves the needle, it's out in the media, it's pumped out there, it's manufactured. I mean, I think, sadly, I think that the public is just overdosing on a lot of this.
Would you say, I think overdosing is a good way to put it, with all the onslaught.
Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just feeding, you know. I didn't know this, but, you know, people are hung up on email, you know, WikiLeaks, you know, all of this. And I'm going to be really careful and never send another email. So only text me, okay?
And Snapchat. Let's just totally do everything through Snapchat. See?
I'm done. I'm never opening my computer again. So, but my point is to you is that, you know, I hope that in the next 100 days that this will settle down a little bit. It won't be so noisy. It won't sound like a lot of clatter. And that people will be able to evaluate with whom their values align. Because that's how I grew up.
Right, where your values align. Well, and let's talk about that a little bit. Because for me, a lot of it comes down to, you know, I think it was discussed a lot tonight. You know, even to the woman who spoke, Anastasia, I can't pronounce her last name, but she was astounding.
Yes.
My family was openly weeping. If you did not catch one of the speeches tonight at the DNC, and perhaps it's not your cup of tea to watch that, whether for politics or just not interested in the way, you know, our candidates are introduced and all the speechifying that's going to go on all week. But this speech was, because I am the mother of a child who has special needs, this young woman met Hillary Clinton when she was only 9 years old, when Hillary was having meetings and having discussions and town hall meetings about early intervention and special needs services. And my whole family, my husband and Griffin, my older son Griffin, we were all on the couch and we were weeping because this young woman has cerebral palsy. She was also diagnosed with a form of a paralyzing disorder that renders her unable to walk. She's in a wheelchair. And they played first the video of Donald Trump mocking this reporter who has special needs. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to do an impression of Donald Trump doing an impression of someone with a disability. But as the mother of a child with a disability, that was enough. That was the end for me. And anybody who sees past that and that everything else is okay. I've said this time and time again. But that speech from Anastasia was wonderful. Anastasia Somoza. What was the feeling like on the floor when she spoke?
Well, I got really angry when I saw that film.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, I me pretty well, Patty. I mean, I'm. You know, I just can't wrap my head around people I'm trying to get into a place where I can understand who would, you know, actually be excited about his candidacy. And I'm not.
But I don't think people are excited about his candidacy. I mean, there are some. And obviously, even some of the interviews of people at the RNC, like they were, you know, on Colbert saying that he was basically like their seventh choice. But do you think that they're excited because that anything but Hillary seems to be, for a lot of people, the case?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And, I am still a student studying the public.
And how long have you been in office? You've been serving the state of Illinois since?
I've been serving the state of Illinois since 1995. So, but this is an extraordinary time. I have to say, I've never quite, you know, this is very different. This is a very different time. I think people feel very disenfranchised. I think that the media has just been, so much information coming out with social media. We are barraged as Americans with information, and we don't even know truth from fiction.
Absolutely. Do you have time later this week? And I may actually steal the WGN fan van and drive to Philly. I'm kind of thinking I'm going to get an air mattress, and I don't know where I can park. I don't know if there's any place. Can I use your shower in your hotel if I do drive there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Text me in.
I'm not even kidding.
If you get in the fan van, let me know. Just text me.
I will text you.
This is just an amazing experience, and it'd be great if you could. Have a little taste.
I don't know why we didn't think about it till today. It's so funny. All right, Representative Sarah Feigenholz, you can follow her on Twitter. How do we follow you on Twitter?
I don't even know what that means.
You're on Facebook.
At staterepsarah.com.
At staterepsarah on Twitter, and we will talk to you again later this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great time and be safe.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. More for this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined by Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago and executive director of Social Change.
That's right.
And we have on the line with us also a listener who wanted to join the conversation before we bring Representative Robert Martwick on the air, who also is at the DNC. Dave, we were talking a little bit about why people are making their choices in this election season. What did you want to tell us, Dave? Yes.
Hi. Donald is a bully and Hillary is boring, but I'm going to vote for Hillary personally because she's in line to pick some, three Supreme Court judges, and I don't want conservative judges there. But I can't help but, when Trump goes, I'm going to make companies that take business out of our country and settle into other countries, I'm going to make them pay. I mean, who has ever said that before? I find that very inspiring. And he says, I'm going to tear up trade deals with China. I mean, that's what it's going to take to change our economy around. And I think that's what appeals to people.
Right.
I mean,
it sounds like he's right. It's almost
revolutionary.
Like it's almost like vengeance. It sounds like he's like the revenge candidate.
Well,
like, right?
I think somebody has to do that. I wish it was someone from the Democratic Party who would take that position. But something needs to be done drastically about this economy and our country. Something drastic has to change. And the only, under Hillary, nothing's going to change. It's going to be same old, same old.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Well, sure.
Let's see what my guests have to say. We have have Representative Martwick on the line, and we also have Todd Belcour. What do you say when you hear that, Representative Martwick?
What he's talking about, many of these ideas are already stolen. These are things that Hillary has talked about throughout her campaign. And one of those things, in fact, Senator Sanders, as he spoke on the floor today, talked about exactly that that he and Hillary together worked on a platform that includes things like, punishing companies that take their businesses overseas and rewarding those that stay and provide jobs for American workers.
We also have, so that's something that she has mentioned, because there was an air conditioning company in Indiana, I think, is the most recent example we can think of as sending jobs to Mexico. And people, mm-hmm. and especially because we look at Indiana as like, let's do things like Indiana. Okay, whatever's going on there is also driving businesses to Mexico.
Right. I mean, you're not, that's like the big fallacy is that we're competing amongst states, and we're really not. There is some little interstate competition, but once a company has decided to go for the ultra low wages of a developing economy, then the competition is not really real at that point. We're not really competing with them. They take the risk to go down there. They don't know what the laws are going to be like. They don't know what the crime's going to be like. They don't know what the enforcement's going to be like. But they say, we'll take the gamble because the wages are so low. But, like you said, Illinois has a lot to offer in terms of what we provide in Illinois and what our country provides. And I think a lot of companies are choosing to stay here. It's just a matter of finding that balance.
Our listener also mentioned that Hillary is boring. And I know, Todd Belcour, you were not necessarily on the Hillary. You're not actually on the Hillary wagon, but given the choices, tell us a little bit about the post. The reason you're here is because Esmeralda reposted your post about your feelings in regards to having been a Bernie supporter and the situation we find ourselves in now with the choices between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Yes, and good evening, everyone. Much to
you're
what
so,
Dave
you're
is
so proper. Good evening. Good evening, Todd.
Much to what Dave is saying.
Hi, Todd.
How are you doing, Representative? It's good to hear your voice also.
Good.
Hope you're enjoying your time in Philly. A lot of people have reached out to me about whether I'm voting for Hillary or not, and I'm speaking as an individual citizen, not as a representative of an organization at this point. And I don't like Hillary, and I haven't been a fan of her for a while, but I do love the country. So given that, it is really important that I considered a candidate, and I really feel like I literally have no choice but to vote for her, given the possibilities is of a Trump presidency. I mean, he doesn't have the temperament. He doesn't have any interest in uniting the country. And, you know, when you talk about having someone with those sorts of traits, being the person who's going to be tasked with protecting our country and having nuclear codes, it becomes very scary. So it's not just a vote based on party, but based on communities. But, you know, the real life implications of having a president who's not concerned about strengthening the middle class and isn't concerned about making sure that we honor our agreements with our allies internationally in terms of protecting one another. Those things are absolutely devastating things that can have a deleterious effect we can never recover from. It's not just a negative, you know, financial impact of a Bush presidency. We're talking about a nuclear war that could be at stake. And when you start to consider those things, as frustrating as it may be to have, you know, the Dem Party having issues with the leaks and the RNC having,
Well, I don't even know how to begin to explain that to people. What has that been like, Representative Martwick, as far as the WikiLeaks, the DNC having to? I don't know if they forced Debbie Wasserman Schultz out or if that was a culmination of all the pressure and fallout from that. What has it been like there today?
You know, it's been, it really hasn't been the issue that you might think it would be, I think because it was handled so swiftly and promptly. I don't know if she was forced out or she resigned, but having Donna Brazile step in is probably, you know.
I don't think it's better than that.
You're going to go to the bench, not a bad move, right?
No.
So I think people are pretty happy, and they're not focused on that. They're focused on what's going on the floor, and today was what a tremendous series of speakers today delivering a coherent message about the difference between what Donald Trump offers in terms of people with disability and people with addiction problems and immigration issues and the middle class and how you treat people that you do business with and what does it mean to be successful and what does it mean to be a public servant and what does it mean to unite as opposed to divide. And I think that, you know, speaker after speaker, whether it was Michelle Obama or Elizabeth Warren or Cory Booker, who just brought down the House, I mean, we had a really great day at the convention, and I thought a really good message. And, you know, one last thing, Todd, I like what you had to say about the choices. Not everyone always likes everything about the candidate that they are choiced with making a decision over, but here's the thing, I've said this often on Patty's show, democracy, the gift of democracy is that you get to choose your own government. The price is that you have to live with your bad choices. And, you know, I think that, sorry, I'm
yeah, I was going to say, where are you?
That sounds like a hell of a reception you're at there, Representative.
No, I know, it's Lou Lane's got a reception, and I closed the doors, but somebody decided they needed to be opened back up again. There we go.
That sounds about right. Illinois delegation represent.
That's right.
Yeah, someone, a lobbyist was making a lot of noise there. You know, and so you get to the beauty is that you get to choose your own government. But the price is that you have to live with your bad decisions. And what I would suggest is that sitting it out is the worst decision of all.
Okay. I think so.
Yep.
I think that's a great point to make. I'm going to let you get back to that reception. I want you to have a good time, and let's check in with you again later this week.
Fantastic. Thanks. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. It's Representative Robert Martwick, and that's from the Fight in 19th, the Jefferson Park, Norwood Park, Harwood Heights area. We just found out that Fishman's is opening again in Portage Park. That's not really important to the national election, but still. It's important
exciting
to folks like me.
I appreciate you.
And Representative Martwick, I want to talk to you when we come back, Todd, about the speeches and what your reaction was. Again, I think tonight one of the big stories is trying, because today's theme at the DNC was unity.
Yes.
And as a Bernie supporter and somebody who was watching probably the Bernie Sanders speech, wanting to hear what was he going to impart on his followers? What urgency was he going to ask of them when it comes to voting for the Democrats? And also to compare it with the first day of the RNC last week, because there was a certain amount of chaos.
There's
today.
Discord on both sides.
Yeah, I think that there was chaos last week, there was chaos today, and there was chaos right here. But let's try this first. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Oh my god, if I could get a wait, the flights to Philly are not that bad. I could go tomorrow at 2 p.m. and get there by 5 o'clock, and it would cost
How
me
much?
about $200 round trip.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And that's not even using
my
miles.
That's round trip?
Hold on a second. Let me check. 100. If I left at like 9 o'clock tomorrow night, I wouldn't get there till midnight and I'd miss everything.
No, you miss all the fun.
No. So if I left, let's see. Hold on. You go ahead and talk. No, I. All right. Just take over the show, Todd.
Well, I'm not sure if everyone had a chance to really take a moment and hear some of the speeches that were given today at the DNC, but there are a few things that are worth remarking on. One, every time Hillary Clinton's name was mentioned, there was audible booing. And the other is...
Why? I mean, Bernie supporters, but
yes, okay. Imagine, or you know, other people who are infiltrating, however you want to think of where it may come from. But the bottom line was, every person who spoke did a wonderful job of contrasting the candidates. And I think as it relates to the pain of kind of overcoming this Dem leaks and all this sort of stuff, when you really get down to the difference between the candidates, the difference is so stark. If it had been a Kasich or something like that, it wouldn't have been as stark. And I could see how a lot more people may gravitate to the Republican ticket. But when you have someone like Trump who's so bombastic and so confident in his ignorance, it becomes really dangerous. And I think between Cory Booker and the way he actually brought a really charismatic speech, Michelle with a very touching, sincere speech.
When they go low, we go high.
That's right.
Do you know, no. You haven't already locked that in?
No, I didn't know what that was.
When they go low,
we go high.
We go high.
Help me understand what that means.
So they take the low road, we take the high road.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with that. This is politics.
No, it was a shorthand that she used, but...
Oh, well, I think...
It was catchy.
She said that, but she's elegant and fancy, but Hillary Clinton is not that kind of lady. She likes to be right there fighting right in the midst with everyone.
She gets on the low road, she takes the low road?
Not the low road, she's just not going back down from a fight.
No, that's true. And can I ask you a question? This is completely separate from the content of their speeches. Why do they all got to yell? What? Why? I mean, do they not have any confidence in the ability of the sound system? I mean, that was something I realized today, and I think one of the most memorable things about Barack Obama's speech when he spoke, Kerry's, right? John, yeah. Kerry's convention. He was very temperate. It was a very measured. It was, but everyone's screaming. I mean, Michelle did not scream,
right.
But you mentioned Cory.
Cory Booker.
I have a friend named Cory Baker, and that's why I pause every single time and I feel bad.
They're both wonderful human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's like a yelling, and Hillary does this, and obviously Donald Trump does this. I mean, Melania did not, the yelling thing is very strange, and it's something that people lock into, and the style, unfortunately, sometimes overcomes the content.
Yeah.
But this is something I was noticing. If you are ever in a situation with a politician, tell them to trust the equipment.
Are they also just loud talkers?
Well, I think that's part of it, but also they're just excited. I mean, this is their opportunity to really get people enthused, and
they
think one way to do it is just bring your energy all the way through the mic, and whether you use an inflection and kind of playing the audience and working the crowd up the way President Obama may do. Some people just say, let's get crowded, let's get excited, everyone, let's go, go. It's like, wait, hold on, why is he yelling?
You're right. I mean, it's like telling someone they talk too fast. This is a good point, Esmeralda. I probably should remember these things. I get very excited and I talk too fast.
Yes. When you go low, I go high.
Yeah, that works too. Did you see Paul Simon sing?
No, I did not see him sing.
And how about it? It was nice. It was. It was funny. I was sitting there and I realized, Garfunkel sang this part. So I did. Look, come on, everybody, a little
You're
bit.
Like, this doesn't even sound right now. Who is this?
This is not his part of the song. But Al Franken and Sarah Silverman lending their comedic talents to the event. I'm not always a big fan of Sarah Silverman's. I thought it was fine. People seem to be offended by her telling Bernie fans that they're ridiculous. What did you think of that?
I think the Democratic Party should be very careful in terms of how flippant they are towards the Bernie Sanders supporters. So I think between, you know, you believe that something's rigged and you see evidence of it being rigged and then you just kind of laugh it off and expect people to just walk through it. I mean, there needs to be a formal apology. There needs to be some
from
opportunity.
Sarah?
No, not from Sarah.
No, I mean, like, I'm just wondering. She was a very ardent Bernie supporter.
Absolutely.
I mean,
But I think what she's not appreciating, the way that some people invested their heart and souls into the movement that he helped create.
Right.
So to just expect people to turn around and just jump on another bandwagon for someone they basically have disdain for over a period of a couple of days, fresh off the news that they were never giving Bernie a real chance to get the American people's heart and ears.
Right.
I think that's a lot to ask. So I think unless they start making real palpable gestures to say, hey, yes, let's fix this party. There's a lot of issues. Help us fix it versus just get over it and vote for her. you may mess around and have Jill Stein and get, you know, 9% of the vote, and then Trump wins by 43% of the vote.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, too. I don't know how long you can stay because I know you're traveling tomorrow. But she didn't just say, she said, I felt the burn, too, but I put some ointment on it. More after this on 720 WGN. Pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I have in studio with me Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor at the University of Chicago in the law department. He's also the executive director of Social Change. We have on the line with us Mark Carman. Oh, what happened to Carm? I just went to go get him and I didn't get him. What did I do? Can you call? Oh, he's calling back.
My title's too long.
It's too long. He was done. He's like, oh, that guy's in the studio. They certainly don't need me. But I have Todd's joined me tonight to talk a little bit about the DNC. And then I realized, you know, what is interesting to me, the conversations that you try to have that the goal is to not ruffle feathers, right? And that seems less and less likely these days. There are very few conversations we can have that rubs people the wrong way than Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter has become something of a dividing line. And today, and not that Michael Jordan has stepped into this and said, and actually said Black Lives Matter, because he's also saying that he respects people in law enforcement, but he has donated money. Carm joins us on the line. Carm, tell us a little bit about what Michael Jordan has come out and said today.
Carm. Hi, Patty. Hey. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Huge day. For Michael, speaking to the undefeated, which I had never heard of the undefeated before today, Patty. I don't know if you have, but I hadn't.
Was he trying to launch somebody's
It's through ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, it's through ESPN, but I had never heard of the whole undefeated deal. Anyway, you know, this is just a huge quote. As a proud American, a father who lost his own dad in a senseless act of violence, and a Black man, this is a Michael quote, I've been deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hand of law enforcement, and angered by the cowardly and hateful targeting of and killing of police officers. So, you know, he donated $1 million to two different organizations. One, the Institute for Community Police Relations,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which apparently was launched in May by the International Association of the Chiefs of Police. And then he also to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which was established, as you are aware, Patty, I'm probably back in 1940.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to knock Michael because I think it's great what he's doing, or at least that he finally stepped up.
Right,
but you know he's on and listen, he's what he's saying is right, but I mean basically, you know, it's not like he's taking some big stand here, right? I mean, he's saying that he support the police and let's support African Americans. So I don't think I think it's great that he's talked, but it's also very calculated too as well. I'm not giving him like over the top props for this. I'd like to hear more.
Well, Todd, what do you think of it? Because I think there's an element of cynicism. I have a little bit of the same reaction that Carm does. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has accused him of taking, you know, commerce over conscience before, and you know, and his entire career has really never. I mean, he's given to charitable organizations, but never stepped up socially, I think, is what a lot of people are kind of being cynical about. What do you think?
I think those are fair accusations. I mean, throughout his entire Hall of Fame career, you would never seen or imagine him taking a stand similar to this. So why I can see why people may say it's calculated, but there's been many other opportunities where there's been crucial, pressing national issues from which he could have used his platform to make a difference, which he's chosen not to. So I think there has to be some merit in recognizing if you've got a guy who's got a 40-year record of ignoring all the societal ails and his opportunity to do something and now decides to, I think you do have to credit the fact that this has a unique pull on his conscience.
It's that bad?
I think
and because
it's
of his
bad.
Own personal experience. His father was gunned down by carjackers.
That's right.
Was it in South Carolina, North Carolina? He was on the side of the road. They found him.
Right.
It was
North
down
Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah, I think that there's that emotional, own personal pull, and he has said as the, you know, he's raising his children, he's the son of someone who was murdered, right? It's hard to be cynical, and I you know, we all should be able to be in the position to one, lend our voices and our money. I mean, yeah. The amount of money he's contributing is significant. But there are a lot of people trying to make social commentary. What do you think in sports, Carm? Because you made excellent points after the passing of Muhammad Ali. Who is going to be the athlete that steps in and uses their fame and their stature to call attention to how people are struggling? You know, the WNBA, I'm sure that you know about the story there. Which team is it? Is it a team or is it the entire WNBA that's being fined?
Well, there was three teams, the New York Liberty, Phoenix Mercury, but those fines actually, Patty, they rescinded those fines.
Really? Yeah. Tell us what they were being fined for. I'm sorry, we haven't told the audience.
They wore black jerseys to draw attention to what was not jerseys. They wore black T-shirts for their warm-ups, and just to draw attention to what was going on, to put their voice in there. And Lisa Borders, who's the president of the WNBA, fined the players $500 each, and the organizations each, there's three of them, $5,000. But then, after a couple of days of discussion and a lot of angry people throughout the league, they rescinded the fines, and they're working on, finding the proper way for their players to express themselves. Leagues do have a uniform code. And I didn't think they should have been fined, but there has to be some level of, you can't just do whatever you want at any moment. I get that. I thought it was ridiculous, but so they're working on how they want to approach what's going on in the world, which I thought was, that's cool. Tons of discussion. We'll fine you. No, actually, we'll look at it closer. We'll decide that we were wrong, and let's see how we can do better. So the WNBA actually did a great job there. As far as people, speaking up, right now the biggest voice in sports to me is LeBron. And he's also in Cleveland, where there's, they've had some incidents. Tamir Rice, kid mm-hmm. who was shot in a park, number one, and LeBron stayed quiet on that. He said, I really don't know what went on. And here's a guy that, grew up with nothing in Akron. I was very smart, too. LeBron is a highly, highly intelligent guy, very well thought out. So it was surprising that he stayed silent on that. But he did just join Carmelo. Anthony was the first to step up recently of the New York Knicks. And then so Carmelo and Dwayne Wade and LeBron, they're all buddies. Chris Paul is in there, too.
Yeah.
So those guys all stepped up at the ESPYs, which I thought was great. I think we talked about that, Patty.
Do you feel like LeBron was taking a page out of the Jordan book by being quiet for so long relating to these issues?
Well, he was and he wasn't. You go back to Trayvon Martin, he was playing with Miami then, and everybody on the Miami Heat, they all wore hoodies in the locker room and said, "I am Trayvon." Yeah. So he did on that one. It was shocking that he did it on Tamir. In his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
So that was disappointing, I guess. Michael's history too. You got to remember, he grew up in a suburb in North Carolina. His parents told him that you're not just supposed to have black friends. You're supposed to have black and white friends. You treat everybody the same. He just wasn't raised, to see color, really. So I think, and he's a businessman. So there's, there's like two parts of it with Michael. And you can't, when I call him out, and when a lot of people call him out, I think you also have to say, listen, in being a social activist is not for everyone. You can't be like, you should do more. There's part of that that's unfair.
Yeah, there is a part of that. If you're not socially active, if you're not socially minded, we don't know. I don't know very much about, and I'm going back to the story, the conversation you had about Muhammad Ali. I don't know how much of that comes from the way you grew up and the things that you're passionate about before you became a star. If you're not going to, throw yourself out there as somebody who wants to make the world a better place, it can't just be because you're famous. Well, now I'm going to be this crusader for justice.
Yeah, well threaded in. I think also the issue is, no matter what your background is or whether or not you're socially minded, as you say, there does become a point where silence is betrayal, as Dr. King was saying. If you see and hear all the news coming on and all the violence, all the abject poverty and things that are disproportionately impacting the community of people who look just like you, it seems like you just have a moral obligation to do more than what's currently being done by a lot of athletes. So I do think it's fair they had that critique of athletes to say, hey, you've got the platform, you've got the money, help. You can do a lot more with your power than what you're currently doing.
I like that. What do you think, Carmelo?
I completely agree. And Carmelo, by the way, who stepped up with his Instagram post, which is an awesome moment in NBA time, as it were. His response to Michael's and Carmelo, by the way, is wears the Jordan brand. I mean, he's sponsored by Nike and the Jordan brand. Carmelo's response to Michael today was about time. You know, so I think a lot of athletes look at MJ and say exactly what you just said, which is, you know, being silent, you're contributing to the problem. Like you've made too much money. You have too big of a platform just to sit there and count dollars and, you know, have your legacy be when you leave the earth that, you know, he made a lot of money and he was a great basketball player. You would think you would step into a whole lot more. It's with Michael too. He's no dummy. He's got to have thoughts about this stuff.
He's no dummy. You know? I kind of like that. Go ahead, Carm.
That's tweetable.
Well, he's a sharp, shrewd dude.
He's a billionaire, right?
Well, right. I mean, you know, you own the Charlotte Hornets. You're educated in a million different ways. You've been around tons of powerful people. Use your influence.
Right. But I mean, at what point can you demand that of somebody again?
Well, he doesn't have to be, out there every day. But, you know, come on. Once in a blue moon, more than once in a blue moon, I don't think that's too much to ask.
Or in this case, once in a career.
Right. There you go. You're right. Once ever.
Right. So, he started the Michael Jordan Foundation when he was here. And he, you know, he did a lot of charity work behind the scenes. It's not like he wasn't doing stuff. But he's just, for whatever reason, has never felt comfortable stepping up and being out in front of it. And it's just, the way the world is right now, it's just, and plus, you know, listen, he ain't playing anymore, although he still makes a ton of money as far as endorsements go. I think close to $100 million a year. So he still has something to lose, but it's like, dude, if I'm a corporation nowadays, I would want the athletes that I'm endorsing to be on the right side of this and saying stuff. I would think that would be, I would think that would make them more marketable, that if they were out there, you know, having an opinion.
Well, Michael Jordan was the one who said, you know, when he was asked about why aren't you supporting black candidates and things like that in the electoral process, he was saying, well, Republicans buy shoes too.
Yeah.
So I think to your point of him being smart and being a businessman, I mean, these are things that have been calculated decisions. I think the overwhelming imagery and the fact that it can impact him so personally is what just really compelled him to go outside of himself and do something he's never done in his entire life.
Yeah. One more question. Oh, actually, I have two more questions. Carm, before you go. One, we were talking a little bit about North Carolina off the air moving the All-Star game because of the issues in regards to transgender or homosexuality. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Carm? I mean, we're talking about the LGBT and the bathroom issue, which, you know, I, part of me is like, how often does this come into play? Like, I mean, literally almost never.
Meaning, but why would a state go ahead and make legislation again,
exactly. Like, what are we talking about here? It's like, it's just completely ridiculous to me. But, you know, North Carolina embarrassed themselves. And I think, you know, I thought it was great. The NBA stepped up and said, listen, if you guys can't come correct, you know, it's such a basic, you know, I mean, a lot of people...
Carm's at a loss for words.
Yeah. It's a lot to ask to have to speak for them.
Like, you know, and whatever, you go out to numerous bars right now, but it's men and women are going to the same bathroom,
right.
You know?
Right.
I say we go for that, but could you guys just, you know, if you're not going to put the seat up...
Here she goes.
At least, you know, have a little better aim is all I'm saying. Okay, go ahead, Carm.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was cool. Hey, listen, we're not playing the All-Star game here. We will play it I mean, what's going to end up happening is they'll have it in 2019 because North Carolina is going to change their law. If they don't, I think the Duke and North Carolina, the most popular college basketball game in the country, they should go and play that at Madison Square Garden in New York, or if they want to come and play it at the United Center. It's cool. You know, we'll sell out Duke Carolina here. I mean, there's a ton of Dukies and Carolina fans, or just people that enjoy great basketball and want to see the best colleges play. So they have power too. So I hope that they keep on turning up the heat.
Yeah, money changes minds.
It does. Well, speaking of money, my last question is, if I found an Airbnb in Philly, would you guys join? You can't come to Philadelphia with me, can you, Carm, Todd? I'm thinking about going to Philadelphia tomorrow.
Wait, hold on a second.
Do
you have an air flight? Do you have a flight booked?
I haven't booked a flight yet.
She's talking about road tripping directly after the broadcast.
I was thinking about taking the
Where
WGN
fan van. Right
fan
now, Carm? We come and fight.
I want to pick you up.
Come and fight you, Carm. Where are you at right now?
I just got so, I don't know. I kind of feel like this is history. This is the first time a woman has accepted the nomination. In the process of running for the election of the president of the United States, and I got kind of jazzed about that tonight.
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot of
fun. I absolutely think you should go, Patty, and I'll be rooting for you the whole way. unfortunately, I won't be able to go, and I will say this because I feel like it's my duty on this call if she loses this election. I'm going to be quite upset with her.
You're saying it's hers to lose, what you just told us.
Well, no, I mean, the fact that it's this close is she needs to look in the mirror and realize everything she's doing wrong. And if I may, she needs to learn to speak not from her throat.
Oh, I know. How do we tell people that as broadcasters,
I have a very vulgar way that I would say it to her behind closed doors.
Oh,
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, listen. It's got to, to a dude, you tell him to, use. Speak from the old 1-2 down there, and she needs to do the same thing.
You weren't ready for that old
1-2.
Hey,
singers know what you're talking about. Kelly's in the studio, and she knows what you're talking about.
Talk with your chest. Say it with your chest.
It's below that.
Chest.
It's lower.
She's got to go where the home run is. Down in there and speak. I mean, come on. It's pathetic.
There you go.
So I don't know how she hasn't been coached to do that. Come on.
You're not wrong. Look, obviously, it's a thing at home. Bill lost his voice over and over again because he was not talking from the boys. Carm, we'll talk to you tomorrow after, I believe, after midnight again, if you don't mind.
Okay, great.
I might be in Philly. Okay, we don't know. We'll see what happens.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Place. And coming up after the news, Kelly, is her mic on right now? So just to ask her. I have a question, Kelly. It's just Kelly now? Not Kelly and the Darlings anymore? Just yell at me. Kelly Ostrom coming up after the break right here on 720 WGN. I want to hear some lovely music on Music Monday. Coming up on July 31st, Kelly Ostrom is playing at Uncommon Ground. Kelly, what song are you playing for us right now?
Don't You Break My Heart.
Don't You Break My Heart. Here it is, Music Monday with Kelly Ostrom.
Was feeling high as a kite. I wished you were where I was. Got a little buzzed. I wanted to make love. Was feeling low to the ground. The next day I woke up. Feeling off the cuff. But God, I need you so much. The sun is setting at noon. 'Cause I am still without you. Won't you set my body free? You're these blues. Well, you can take my love whenever you want, and you can have my trust. no matter what. But if you break it, just don't break my heart. And I will give my all to be with you. I will catch your faults, your promises. Don't you break them. Don't you break my heart. Don't you break it. Don't you break my heart. Was turning red as a plum. I saw you standing there, pretending not to care. I couldn't stop my stare. The sun is setting at noon, 'cause I am still without you. Won't you set my body free? You're these blues. Well, you can take my love whenever you want, and you can have my trust no matter what. But if you break it, just don't break my heart. And I will give my all to be with you. I will catch your faults, your promises. Don't you break them. Don't you break my heart. Don't you break it. Don't you break my heart. I just wanna tell you that I don't give a damn. I just wanna be with you and make you understand. The sun is setting at noon, 'cause I am still without you. And won't you set my body free? Cure these blues. Well, you can take my love whenever you want, and you can have my trust no matter what. But if you break it, just don't break my heart. And I will give my all to be with you. I will catch your faults, your promises. Don't you break them. Don't you break my heart. Don't you break it. Don't you break my heart.
Yeah, that's Kelly Ahlstrom. It's amazing. It's a really beautiful voice, and she'll be playing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st, but she's playing right here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio with Todd Belcour. We are enjoying the amazing music of Kelly Ahlstrom. She's performing on July 31st at Uncommon Ground. Here she is live with Sunny.
Sunny left defeated. Sunny came back home. He met a girl named Freedom, but prefers to be alone. He's gotten older now. It's much colder now back at home. She worries about his heartache. She tells him not to go. When he left the homeland, she forgot the sun. She knows he's gotten older now. It's much colder now back at home. But if you have to go, remember how I held you so. And if you have to go, remember how I held you so. Well, Sonny had a daughter that Sonny never knew. He told himself he'd care for her if he only didn't go. She's got older now. It's much colder now back at home. Well, Sonny watched the sunset. Sonny see it glow. It turns his face red every night. How he wished it would turn gold. He's gotten older now. It's much colder now back at home. But if you have to go, remember how I held you so. And if you have to go, remember how I held you so. Ooh, oh, oh. Whoa, I'm coming home.
That's Kelly Ahlstrom. Really amazing. I should be clapping, but I'm still Facebook Live. I'm going to say goodbye to our followers right now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Everyone who's listening, really, I'm almost jealous of them because there's something about hearing your music in the middle of the night and having your voice sort of carry through like whatever anxieties or worries. It's sort of like that the intensity that you have, I think, is also soothing to people who are worrying about other things, you know? Yeah. It kind of takes a little bit of their stress away. Come on over and join us, if you will. That's Kelly Ahlstrom. She's performing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st. Want to thank Bob Ferguson for really, again, doing such an outstanding job of helping our musicians make sure that they can bring you the best in their music. And really great job. Yeah, that is really beautiful.
Blue chip athlete you just brought in here right now.
I'm saying. Esmeralda, we do a lot of the Music Mondays. Isn't there something haunting about Kelly's music that's also uplifting? Because that's a weird thing to have at the same time, isn't
it? It's a lot of soul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I also feel like that song, and I do this a lot, where I pretend I'm in music videos. but it felt like if I was walking down the street, like it would be perfect in a movie.
Yeah.
Where just someone's, you know, like thoughts going, that's the song playing.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny that you say that, because that's kind of how I write songs a little bit, is like think of myself in a movie like, oh yeah, this would be the soundtrack.
Nice.
And also the rhythm of it to me seemed like I'd be walking along the like railroad tracks. Like, you know, there's something to that for me. Yeah. I think, and that's the beauty of music. We all put ourselves, take what we feel from it. And that was really gorgeous.
Thank you.
Astonishing amount of depth in it too. You can feel the spirit. It's wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah.
Wonderful. And you have you're incorporating some a lot of solo performance elements to this. You have your own drums. What is that called? A kick drum?
I have a stomp box, making the kick drum sound.
A stomp box. Okay.
Yeah, and then I'm hitting a snare with my other foot.
Oh, so there it was. I saw both feet. I wasn't sure what the other foot was. Okay, so you had one of each.
Yeah.
I can't even walk and chew gum. Yeah. I can barely sit here and talk.
She's doing four instruments at a time. That's pretty incredible.
That was gorgeous. So you, as a solo performer, is there some sort of freedom to that right now? Are you, because I know that you've worked with a band before.
Yes.
And yeah. But because I'm a solo performer when I do stand-up comedy, as great as it is to work with other people, there's also a freedom of like, it's all on me.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's kind of in the record I'm making, which I have a GoFundMe going on right now to build up money for that record. But that's kind of the idea behind it, is it's all going to be my own artistic kind of creations going on. And it's not, you know, anything that anybody else has told me to do or like told me to, you know, sound like or anything like that. It's just totally authentic.
B. Kelly.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the GoFundMe label? How do we find that?
You can go to GoFundMe.com/FundKelly's album, and that's Kelly with an E-Y, so K-E-L-L-E-Y, Fund Kelly's album.
I will change that on the Facebook post, by the way. I got her last name, and I forgot. I thought that was what it was. I saw your post earlier on our page, so I appreciate that. And again, Uncommon Ground on July 31st, which is Todd said, a great venue. And
absolutely.
Yeah, so much fun. Yeah. How long have you been playing the guitar? Like, when did you start?
I started guitar when I was like probably around 10-ish, but I got actually good at it at like 16 probably, or 14 or something around there, when I was a
I love teenager. That you have like a you kind of remember yourself. Do you have that sort of mental picture of I'm doing this really well? Do you kind of have that memory of it?
Yeah, at a certain point, like, it, you know, it clicks, and then it's kind of like, oh, this is really what I want to do.
What was some of the music you were playing? Was it your own, or was it another song?
Well, I used to sing Christina Aguilera a lot.
Okay.
That's who inspired me originally when I was about 10 or so. And but then when I was a teenager, I just started writing my own songs, and that's really what I love to do. So
Chris, you mentioned Christina Aguilera. What other influences did you have? Because, I mean, that's a pretty powerful female singer.
Yeah, she is. I'd say also Adele, Amy Winehouse, those types of artists. Even Etta James from back when.
Only the legends, fair enough.
Yeah.
No small potatoes there.
No, not at all. Etta James. I was just listening to some Nina Simone the other night, by the way.
Oh, I love Nina Simone as well.
Oh, man.
She's great.
Really. I think it was did you post a Nina Simone?
Did
you? It was because of you. I was like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and do some writing. I should listen to Nina Simone. So this is all full circle right
here. I'm telling you.
I'm just saying. Because I think that music sort of, it feeds an emptiness sometimes when you're like, I need to clear my thoughts and focus on something. Like, if you were going to just sit down and want to clear your head, what kind of music do you, like right now, what would you kind of pop in, do you think?
Oh,
I saw
gosh.
A picture of Melissa Etheridge the other day. I'm like, you know, I haven't listened to her for a while. And that's where I am right now. I'm back at Melissa Etheridge.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa Etheridge is great. I went to one of her concerts and like, I was going to the bathroom when she was starting her show.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just like came right there.
No.
And I was like, whoa, hi.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
I saw Indigo Girls a couple of weeks ago. Also at
cool.
Ravenna.
All throwback names over here, huh?
Throwback. They're all working and doing concerts. Yes, a little bit of throwback.
Yeah, right. So it's a new edition.
Okay, then. Fair enough. More with Kelly Ahlstrom, who is performing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st, and Todd Belcour, who is our social justice crusader. See, I didn't say that on the air earlier. I'm making a cape for you while we speak. It is Music Monday in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining us is Kelly Ahlstrom. She'll be performing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st. Here she is, though, live playing Walk Away.
I'm not blinded this time, oh no, it's happened before and I've since let it go, oh, next time I'll be
more careful. Oh, oh, oh. Never to open my heart no more. Oh, oh. So don't you walk away again. I can see you're beckoning to leave again. I can see you're beckoning to leave again. I'd bet on my whole damn life it's because my mother ain't your wife. It's because my mother ain't your wife no more. No more. Next time I'll be cautious. Oh, oh, oh. I walk between the lines I've since ignored. Oh, oh. 'Cause I was the door to her heart. Oh, oh, oh. How foolish of me to think I was more. Oh, oh. So don't you walk away again. I can see you're beckoning to leave again. I can see you're beckoning to leave again. I'd bet on my whole damn life it's because my mother ain't your wife. It's because my mother ain't your wife no more. No more. To leave again. I can see you're beckoning to leave again. And I'd bet on my whole damn life it's because my mother ain't your wife. It's because my mother ain't your wife no more. No more.
Yeah, that's Kelly Ahlstrom. Come on over to the microphone. That's Walk Away by Kelly Ahlstrom. She'll be playing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st. And we got a lot of love for you on our Facebook Live, by the way. And those of you who don't follow us on Facebook, we invite you to. I'm at Patty V Show and also Patty Vasquez on Facebook. And join us at WGN Radio on Facebook as well. So there are videos of Kelly playing tonight. But really, having heard you in studio and on the air, it both ways, I mean, just such beautiful music. What inspired Walk Away? Because that's, there's a lot of beauty there. I'm going to say goodbye to
that's a very personal song, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, what inspired that, I mean, that's kind of a song about, you know, growing up as a child who was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had different relationships while I was growing up. And, you know, a lot of them ended, basically. So that's what that's about, just kind of being walked out on a lot. So,
and was that a lot of, you know, fear of being attached? And
yes, definitely. That's kind of, you know, how it feels after that sort of stuff happens. Mm-hmm. A few times. So
Yeah. That's really good music, by the way. We have a new thing where we're playing a little bit of music before the end of the hour, and so I don't mean to play you off. Do you want to hang out? We're going to have a conversation after 1 a.m. I'm not throwing you out of the studio, because you're welcome to join our conversations about... do we have a break before the 1 a.m. news? that's gonna be playing for over. Yeah, it's fine. It all works out. I'm like, wow, that is intense. I can do this. Honestly, I can do this with the music. It's up to me where the music is. We're working this out, Todd. This is all a work in progress. I'm just saying right there. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in LaGrange.
Oh, you did?
Yes. West suburbs.
And how much? Yes. You're fine.
I went to high school with Kelly.
Oh,
yes, we did.
Oh, there you go.
And are you telling us that because you have some secrets to share about her?
I have one secret. It's a good secret.
Look out.
Yeah, we were in music theory together, music theory class, and she had us listen to one of her songs, and everybody in the class was like, our hair was blowing in the wind.
Really? So yeah. It was very dramatic.
Oh, wow. I hardly
Not dramatic, but we were all just blown away.
Oh, thanks.
Can I ask a question now that we've had so many people talk about music theory? Because I've never taken a music class in my entire life. What is the theory of music?
There's some math.
I always hear about the music theory classes. I don't know what that means. I don't. I mean, I'm being serious.
It's the language of your soul.
It's a little hard to describe in one sentence, I would say.
So
but...
let's say a typical course, you know, when you're getting your books, your textbooks, and you're getting a lecture, what are some of the things they discuss? 10? Oh, it's time for me to go. You know, we're going to ask, we're going to go to the break, we're going to go to the news, and maybe think about that and let me know what you think. Okay. Is this Mozart?
It's Vivaldi.
Oh, of course it's Vivaldi. Why wouldn't
Four
it be?
Four Seasons.
Oh, this is lovely. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, enjoying Music Monday with our guest, Todd Belcore, who is our friend that I've met in Springfield, actually. My friend that I met in Springfield was really kind, took me under his wing trying to figure out how to speak to legislators, prevented me from speaking to Representative Ives on my one of my first days there. I mean, you kind of clipped me a little bit and threw me against the rail and said, don't talk to her.
Artfully made sure you were aware of the consequences.
Do you know, are you familiar with the representatives in your area? I know that, like, I didn't learn a lot until, like, the last about 2 years about the specifics of, you know, what the legislation was like, what the process was like. Do you get involved in politics?
I mean, it's hard to not, like, a little bit right now, but...
Oh, no. A lot of people find it very easy to not know anything. It seems to be actually more common to just go, la, 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 or to say this a lot. Believe what you want to believe, or let's agree to disagree. No, I'm going to go with you're just saying la, 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 la. So where did you grew up in LaGrange.
Yes.
Do you know your rep? Where your senator? It's okay.
No, I don't.
Do you have a LaGrange area? I'm not sure who the rep is.
I was going to say it's
very big story last. Is it?
Your
rep may have stepped down yesterday under a cloud of mystery. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Your guy may have, Representative Sandek has resigned and has said that he was the victim of a cybersecurity attack and said he wanted to spend time with his family. Esmeralda, when you hear those words all in the same sentence, where does your mind go?
No, we're good.
Because for me, I'm like, I mean, I feel bad for him and his family.
Right.
Him, yeah.
Oh, there's no doubt. He was one of my favorite people to watch. He's very passionate.
You feel bad, but I'm like, what cybersecurity problem happened?
Exactly. Are you following both? Like, did you watch the convention last week, the Republican convention, Kelly?
I didn't watch it, no.
Did you watch tonight?
No.
No? Okay, there you go. Fair enough. Have you ever...
She's busy preparing for a major performance today on radio.
Such great music tonight. Again, Kelly Ahlstrom is performing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st, and the music you heard in the last hour was all hers. Really beautiful lyrics, just enjoyable. And I had asked you, like, if when you're trying to clear your head, what music do you throw in? What's your go-to?
You know, I've been listening to Air a lot.
What's
recently?
Air?
They're this band... it's just like a two-person band, and they kind of do like experimental, like very chill, laid-back sort of music.
I feel like Elif's pulling some up for us right now.
They're French.
She's frantically typing.
I'm a huge fan.
Ditto.
Yes, they're awesome.
I feel like I'm the only one. Todd, are we too old? Did we just become the old kids in the room just now?
I'm a little darker than you, so I don't really know about a lot of that folkism anymore. when I was in school in Ann Arbor, I knew a lot more hippies than I do now. Now I know a lot more activists. We tend to be of color, so that sounds like some amazing stuff. Your music was absolutely captivating.
Gorgeous. Oh, thank
you. I feel like I'm deprived by not knowing about what you're referring to right now. I'm sorry.
No, here we go. I think that Ella's going to
I can put you on that ratchet stuff. You want to hear about that ratchet music?
This is it right here. Oh, I think we can go here.
All right, so this is the intro, and then, you know, then there's some saxophone and, you know.
Other things?
Other things.
Fair enough.
Some vocals.
You can do a lot with this background. This is dope.
Actually,
I didn't mean it. It wasn't meant to be a segue.
A segue to our next topic? Wait, where did the article go? Here it is. This is what we were going to do this at 12:30, but you know there's so much conversation and great company in the studio. There's an article about well, let me put it this way. You know, we used to have a segment called the Midnight Teas where we would talk about adult topics, whether it was about sexual health. Do you mind if we go this way, Kelly?
Oh, I don't mind.
All right, because there's a lot of I think perspective is changing in the United States. I hope that it's becoming less. I don't want to say prude, but
taboo.
A lot of taboos are changing. There are people talking about
polyamorous.
Yeah, I can't even say it.
Not that I subscribe.
I never multi dated. What do you call? I mean, like sort
multi-dated.
Of. I never multi dated. I never
a foreigner in these lands.
I was never dating more than one person at the same time. I never was like, oh, it's gonna be Tim on Tuesday, and I'll see what you know John's up to on Friday. Like I never did that. So it's all. It's all foreign to me. I have friends who tell me that. I mean, Esmeralda, have you dated more than one person at the same time?
Yep.
Kelly?
She kept it real.
No, I have not.
You have not. So
I have not.
We're both serial monogamists.
Yes.
I would say one long relationship. Todd, do you? You have to answer. You look like you don't want to.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. No, absolutely not.
Elif, have you? Do you serial date?
Definitely not.
Relationship, right? If you're gonna go out with somebody. It either works or it doesn't, and you go
out
with them again.
Strict monogamist.
Yeah, and I never thought of it that way. I never thought, well, I should date a few people. It just never occurred to me. I don't know why. So when you now throw into the mix the idea, and you hear this from couples who want to spice things up or you know change it up or a little bit or whatever, but having a threesome sounds like so much work to me. Polyamorous is one thing, right? Because that's when you're... And the rules of polyamorous relationships are different for each couple, I'm imagining. But it's not a couple. It's multiple... Like who?
Well, it can be couples, and then they break off...
And they agree to...
And have other relationships, which I haven't... I've never done that. It's just... I've dated... more than one person.
I just think there are no rules. I think that's right. The purpose of it.
Well, polyamorous and dating multiple people are two different things,
yeah.
Right?
Like but I don't think that it's a thing of there's no rules. There's actually probably a lot of rules.
But different rules
to
for each
polyamorous
couple.
Well,
tell me, what rules are there then, since you know?
Well, just with polyamorous couples, you have to really stick to a lot of rules because it's all about consent and is the other person okay with you being out with someone, and you always have to tell people that they're... And this is more like open relationship as well, is where, you know... One person is like, yes, I'm going to go on a date with this other person, and I'm not coming home tonight, or I will come home. I will be home at this hour, and like, are you okay with that? It's a lot of thing of everything has to be on the up and up.
Todd's, what
this
was
is
that?
Mind blowing to me.
Communication.
Yeah,
but a lot of communication.
When is there too much communication, Kelly? I mean, right? How much do you want to know if you're in an open relationship or polyamorous, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
how was your date?
I mean,
did he come home and you're like,
so? But right? I can understand how, like, the appeal possibly. You know, I mean, especially if you're, young, and then
right?
You get into a serious relationship, and then that's the only person, you know, if you're going to be monogamous, that you're going to be with forever. So, you know, I can see the natural sort of appeal.
Progression. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw this. I've actually never said this. So you're welcome, Patty.
Okay.
I was the single side of an open relationship.
Okay.
What is that?
So
mean?
I was
someone
with,
was in a relationship and she was dating somebody in that couple.
Yes. I was dating. They weren't married, but there was a thing. It's like, yeah, no, we're essentially just married.
Right.
And I was I never talked to her because there's some that, yeah, they like include you're all into it. And I think that's more polyamorous, but it was just that, yeah, he would go on dates. And she would go on dates as well. And then we just started seeing each other more often. But she knew completely, but I never met her or anything like that. But it was like I was just going on a date with somebody. Like, we dated for like
a year.
Did
he talk about his relationship with that person?
A little bit. Like, he would mention her, and actually at one point I would mention an ex, and he'd be like, does he have a name? Because I would always be like, my ex-boyfriend. And he'd be like, he has a name, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's this. So it was funny because he would be like, yeah, so-and-so, we did this weekend or whatever. And
right. He was very matter-of-fact, whereas you were like, this is separate.
Yeah, I was kind of like trying to like go around it. And he's like, no, just tell me, what was his name? It doesn't matter. It's
Todd's,
fine.
Todd's working on this.
You need to stop dehumanizing your exes first, Esmeralda. Let's start there before we go anywhere else.
By the way, Esmeralda's current relationship is, I think, should be envied by many.
Aw.
Very sweet couple.
And really. Yeah, no, and I would never be into an open relationship in that side of it.
Right, and the inside of it.
Yeah, the one where you're the couple together and then you see them go off. But it was very, again.
See them go off.
Well, no, it was very consent-based. Like, he had to ask before we went out in the sense of I would ask him, like, hey, what are you doing on Thursday? There's a show. And he'd be like, hold on, I have to check with her.
Right. Oh, weird.
And he has to do the same. She had to do the same with him.
Todd just flinched a little bit. I think we're going to learn more about Todd and Kelly when we come back and possibly Aleph. Not me. I got nothing to share. By the way, let's see what you have experienced. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. Again, that's 312-981-7200. Have you been on the inside or outside of an open relationship? And we were actually going to talk about threesomes. So if that's also in your wheelhouse... Give us a call. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcore. He is the... Belcore? Todd Belcore,
it's a
who
very
is...
strong name.
It is very strong. He is an adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago, and he is also... at the law school. Adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago.
You can teach law classes in undergrad now. They teach pre-med, pre-law.
At the University of Chicago Law School.
This is what you call a tangent.
That's okay. That's good. It's a learning moment. I need learning moments, Kelly. If Kelly wants to tell me about certain chords that I don't understand, that also would be appropriate.
I feel like, given the topic of conversation, anything sounds like innuendo right now. So it's telling Kelly to teach you about chords. I didn't
adjunct. And the CEO, the executive director of Social Change.
That's right.
And you also have a film festival that you do.
The Social Change Film Festival coming up in September 23rd to 25th at Showplace Icon. That's films that document injustice from all over the world. And we give people who see the films an opportunity to do something about the film, the issue showcased in the films.
So it's more proactive rather than sort of consuming it. What can you do next? What next?
That's right. And the purpose of Social Change is to help turn protests into progress. So we work with organizations and individuals who identify problems and help them craft solutions and the steps to actually get those to come to pass.
Excellent. That's Todd Belcore. And we're so happy to have him here for Music Monday with Kelly Allstrom, who is performing on July 31st at Uncommon Ground. And I have dragged them both, kicking and screaming, into a conversation about open relationships and threesomes.
Warning! We are entering adult topics here. You have been warned. But we will keep it classy.
Maybe. We haven't. It's undetermined yet. There are people who enjoy a threesome. I've just always thought that it just seems like a lot of work. Right? And
it does seem like a lot of multitasking.
It does. Right? And then I think that... who is attended to and for how long, right? I mean, like, you can't have a timer, right? Like, it's his turn, then it's her turn, then it's her turn again. Like, what are you laughing at? I'm just saying,
there are
like...
no words. I mean, well, how do you respond
because
to
I think in a man's mind...
being next to the bed.
It's like, okay. Ding, time's up. But, I mean, I think for men, it's both sensual and visual, right? I think in their mind they imagine... and this is, again, my own assumptions about what men look for in a threesome. Because I'm going to go ahead and wager that most men... think of a threesome as two women and a man. Whereas, I don't know, I think that probably a lot of women do too, but there have...
Surely there's a male caller who can respond to some of these issues.
312-981-7200. I wonder how you know, common it is for two men and a woman. That's just, I think that there are more, it's more taboo. It's more, there's, you know, there's so much more, you know, socially that doesn't feel comfortable for guys unless they, I don't know.
There's so much code speak right now. Do you know what to do?
Esmeralda, has it ever come up for you? Cause it's never come up for me. I'm going to go ahead and say that right now.
It has, but it never, nothing never happened with the idea.
Right.
When you say that nothing never happened, does that mean something happened?
There was a conversation.
No, there was a conversation, and it just never went anywhere.
Okay.
Because, again, there was a lot of like, nope, I not may that, have, no, I
may,
doing
I may,
this.
I may have gotten farther than that. So I'm just remembering grad school. Look at Elif. What?
There may have,
whoa.
there may have See, been. Now, was that all just people? Those, or was it in a relationship?
It was, no, no one was, I was not in a relationship and neither were the guys.
Oh, see.
But one, they were,
mine was a relationship and we were thinking.
We were thinking about inviting someone else.
Right.
I've actually
but
had,
we never did it.
I've actually had one of the guys on my show before. We didn't talk about it on the air, but yeah. That Ellis, like, I'm sorry, what happened?
Who is this woman I'm working with?
I know. It was the gentleman, one guy was bisexual and then the other guy was gay. And there was no conversation. So I think that was part of why it got weird. So I was like, it seemed more like the gay guy and the bisexual guy wanted to have time with each other. And I was like, well, I'm going to go. Cause
yeah, that doesn't seem fair because then there's one person there that you just can't.
Yeah,
not
no,
can't,
I was,
but they probably don't want to.
I was clearly being brushed off.
Right.
Yeah, that seems counterproductive.
Yes, it was. I was like, I'm gonna be somewhere that's other right now. So that was one of my days at Northwestern. So that happened.
Did you have to mention the institution?
Oh yeah, Northwestern. Right. Why not? I mean, you know, I was young. I was like 20-ish.
You're still young.
Oh, thank you very much. So there can be rules though. That was the thing. I think that if you're gonna contemplate it, it's in your inner relationship. That's different. None of us were actually in a relationship with the people in the room or
Esmeralda.
Well, no, we never, it really was just more the conversation never got past. Mm-hmm. Like we never got down to like, all right,
well, who vetoed?
Rule number one.
Yeah. Who vetoed?
We just never, just kind of
never got past.
I'm
the planning
stage. I'm hearing a lot of we, but who brought it up?
Oh,
I don't know.
No, she
don't I don't
know.
Think he did. Or
ooh.
I think it was more of like ooh. A just, oh, this is an interesting idea.
Elif, who am I working with?
Right, right.
I love that.
You learn a lot about people at 1:22 in the morning.
Yeah. And here comes Bob Ferguson. What are we talking about? Kelly, have you ever, and you don't have to tell us if you don't want to. Has it ever come up in a conversation?
Having a threesome?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has. But it was more of like a joke scenario almost. Like we all just huddled together and like sang a song. We're like, come together, you
aww,
know?
See?
And then we were like, nobody made the move. So it didn't happen.
Oh.
So was it just a move away?
Yes. I think so.
Wow. See? She had a similar situation. Well, there can be rules. And if your unwillingness to try a threesome is a deal breaker, they don't deserve you. So don't be, you know, don't feel like you can't speak up. If someone says, I want to have a threesome and they're pressuring you, I think that that's clearly something you should feel comfortable saying. It's not for me. That's
yeah,
otherwise, it's not consensual.
It's not. I mean, and I think that people sometimes feel vulnerable in their relationships. If this is what that person wants, does my entire relationship hinge on this? Are we going to be able to move forward? Or is he always or she always going to be thinking about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be confident, I think. That's hard.
When you make sacrifices in that arena, you want to make sacrifices on a conservative end, not force people to go over the top beyond their comfort level.
But I think we're at a time now socially and culturally. I don't know if there's a difference, but I think we're at a time now. I was at a taping of Oprah Winfrey. This is so long ago.
Uh-oh, okay.
But it was about young kids, like 12, 13, 14-year-olds going to sex parties.
Jesus.
And the things that they were doing were things that I would never, ever think of doing. You know, what girls were, because they felt pressured to. They felt like, if I don't do this, the boys won't like me. And imagine how much harder that is now with social media and like being able to coerce somebody. So
the pressure must be incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what our ages are, but I think that the what's the norms of sexual activity are, and we're not, they're still not at the surface. It's all kind of beneath the surface of what people want from each other and what they expect from each other, and the rest of us going, I'm sorry, what? Right. And I don't know where the middle ground is between shock and, you know, our norms. Does that make sense?
Respecting people's evolution whenever they're ready to do whatever they're ready to do. I think the problem is now, I mean, people, youth in particular, are inundated with so many sexual images and so much pressure from others to send naked pictures and all sorts of stuff, snapping, all that stuff.
Yes.
I just, as a parent, that must be just like a 24/7 sort of monitoring ideal to deal with all that.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, I didn't have my first girlfriend until I was in college. So, like, I'm a late bloomer. But now I wouldn't even be allowed to even, I'd have to fake like I had a girlfriend or something like that.
Oh,
you know,
in
high school.
Getting started on virginity and when you, like that, like even the social expectations of if someone's in their 20s and they're a virgin, somehow they're ostracized or they're not believed, you know. It's sort of, we're not allowing for personal development.
That's right.
I think it's not talked about, too, like in a very open way. So, like, I think that, you know, people are, like, a little confused about expectations anyway,
right,
about, like, what sex is, even.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that may be part of the thing. We're quite closed about it in this country anyway. And I know that there's other countries I've heard that kind of are more open in the sex education sort of proponent, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because porn has such a big influence now too, and there has to be somewhere in the middle of the Republican platform. I'm bringing it right back to the conventions. No, but part of their platform was that porn is a threat to public health. That was actually part of their platform.
And then, ironically, the male escort service boomed during the RNC.
Yeah, don't even get me started. Yeah, down on Craigslist, like the search engines blew up for looking for male escorts. And not that they're related, but I mean, when you're out and about, I mean, that's the true as well for like during the Super Bowl, you know, when in Indianapolis, they drew a lot of the sex industry, whether it was male or female. And I don't know. I mean, look, the sex industry, whether it's, paying for it or, you know, whether it's escorts or whatever. I don't even know how to bring that in because there's such a subculture actually of that we are, because we don't talk about it, sort of aggravates it, sort of makes it something that we have to seek out in very negative ways sometimes. Yeah. And if trying to find that middle ground of it's okay to want pleasure. How are you protecting yourself and the people that you love? What? If you're going outside of your marriage or your relationship. Wow, this got complicated.
It did. It got real deep really quickly. But, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning the unique hypocrisy associated with, you know, same-sex sort of outside of your marriage stuff within a Republican Party. So if you have a party that campaigns on, has a platform notion saying people of certain gender identity aren't permitted to do certain things, and then when you have a moment, a spare moment, you're on the websites and trying to find some man to do some things with, I think that's the sort of hypocrisy that American people deserve something better than.
Well, let's see what we deserve better then after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are having a wonderful conversation on and off the air. I apologize whenever I talk about the off-air conversation, but if I put microphones in here and taped everybody, they wouldn't be as laid back as they are. And I tell you that my guests are really wonderful tonight. We have Kelly Ahlstrom, who is playing at Uncommon Ground on July 31st. And we have Ted Belcour, who is Ted? Wow, your mic's not on, Todd. Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor of law at the University of Chicago Law School and the executive director of Social Change. He has a film festival coming up in September. We'll talk more about that. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Kelly Ahlstrom, who played some wonderful music for us earlier. You can go to my Facebook page, Patty Vasquez, or else WGN Radio's Facebook page and watch some of the beautiful music that you played for us. You can watch the music. I said you can watch the music.
People feel you. They feel what you're saying.
You can listen to the music. You can watch her play.
And go fund her, more importantly.
Go fund her. Tell us a little bit more about that, Kelly.
Yeah. I started a GoFundMe to fund money for my album that I'm making right now. And it's actually already written and everything. I just need the studio time, basically. So that's what I'm fundraising for.
And again, people can go to GoFundMe.com.
GoFundMe.com/fundKelly's album. And that's Kelly with an EY.
Wonderful.
Fund Kelly's album.
Worthwhile. Really beautiful music that you had tonight.
Thank you.
Look forward to having you back again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor of, God, I can't say professor.
That's
adjunct. Right. Well, it's the adjunct.
I teach a class Eradicating the New Jim Crow at University of Chicago Law School.
Mm-hmm. Eradicating Jim Crow.
The New Jim Crow.
What's the New Jim Crow?
Well, you're right. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Because I know Jim the old... Crow, well, go first.
Well, that's right.
Let's do first the old Jim Crow laws.
That's right. It's the manifestation of slavery through different institutions. So legalizing a lot of discrimination and the disenfranchisement of people of color through law. And that's been manifested in a different way in the current era through disenfranchisement according to criminal records.
And what were some of the elements? Because would crop sharing be one of the elements? What are you looking at me like that?
Not in the current day.
No. But oh, I mean, okay, part of the original Jim Crow laws, like the fact that you would have your own land, but somehow you owed that to.
Oh, certainly. I mean, things like apprenticeship programs back in the early days when, you know, after Reconstruction, they would actually subjugate people of color into a quote unquote apprenticeship program. So they were then qualified to have land.
Right.
But that would serve as just continuing this enslavement.
It wasn't for their own independence.
Absolutely not. I mean, at that point.
When I say crop sharing, like people look at me like, what are you talking about? No. I'm serious. Yeah. But I think there are ways now that's not crop sharing, but the idea that there is an independence and yet there is a dependence. And what are some of the elements now that's being kind of reintroduced in a way that we're not familiar with or sensitive to?
Absolutely. I mean, everyone's pretty much familiar at this point, the disproportionate contact that law enforcement has with people of color. The militarization of different communities just requires that there's a lot more contact. For an equal amount of transgression as relates to drug, you know, offenses in particular. So if you have that sort of contact by law enforcement for a particular population, and then you have laws that say, hey, if you have convictions for, say, drug convictions, drug cases, you can't vote, you can't work, you can't have a place to live, and then what happens? And it becomes subjugated in a different way. So that's why it's called the New Jim Crow, because it's a new system of laws that keep another population and disempowered and disenfranchised.
And when people hear things like disenfranchised, disempowered, I mean, I think there are so many people that feel disenfranchised, whether or not we use that kind of language. I was talking earlier about Bernie Sanders' speech about the top 1% making, and I tried following his math. I don't. Did you hear Bernie talk about the? He said that the top 10% of the top 1% owns more than the 90% combined. Do you remember that part? Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, what he's saying is just you've got people who are not just getting richer, but they're getting ridiculously richer such that, that no one else has a real opportunity to have a piece of the American pie. And that's just violative of the entire reason that this country is formed.
Well, surely that's because of welfare and because we're paying for social services and because we're paying for And so I was literally in the shower when I heard him say that. I was listening to Bernie Sanders' speech in the shower, which is weird on so many levels. No one needs to be watching that when you hear him say things. But when he said that, I was trying to think, well, what contributes to that? What is making that happen? And why isn't that the conversation on both sides of the aisle? But if Donald Trump is part of that top 10% of that 1%, why would he have that conversation?
Well, it's the fallacy of the whole notion of trickle-down economics. It's not like when I become enriched, then I'm going to make sure I make everyone else around me has more opportunities. No, I actually want to make sure I get more money.
No, but there would more jobs, Todd. You're going to create more jobs.
Well, you're trying to get more of a bottom line. You're not necessarily concerned about making sure that people in your community work. You really don't care about jobs. You worry about your bottom line. In fact, I mean...
But they tell us it's more jobs. That's why Indiana works.
Well, even though they're CEOs right now. Obviously, that's BS.
But no, I mean, like, just because a CEO in Indiana makes 372 times what the average worker makes, how is that creating a bigger divide?
Well, that's precisely the point. I mean, the people in the everyday communities are working their butts off, too, and they deserve to have an opportunity to take care of their families as well.
Right.
And it's impossible for me to believe that someone provides such unique skills that they deserve to make 400 times what someone else makes when they don't allow an opportunity for those people to feed their family and be in a position where they can have dreams and hopes like everyone else.
But if we protect the corporate economy, if we continue to make tax cuts for the corporations, I mean, like, that means that when we get there, when we have access to being in those jobs, then we get to protect ourselves.
Well, what you're referring to now is something that's not properly labeled. It's corporate welfare. So what we do is provide tax breaks and incentives and government subsidies for entities and bodies, and it's never really given any scrutiny. It's only given scrutiny when you're trying to give people food. When it gets to food stamps, it gets to TANF and things that they need to have basic sustenance, the amount of scrutiny that's given to that, it's incredible. But when it comes to tax breaks for corporations or the tax structure for people of the higher echelons, it's expected. It's assumed that that's what we do for a growing economy. Why don't we do something for the country and make sure that the lower population, who's been struggling to maintain themselves and build, you know, break the generational poverty, so they can do more than just go hand to mouth, and they can actually grow and enjoy social economic mobility as well.
Well, we've provided a minimum wage, so someone working at Walmart, you know, those people are able to make enough of an income to not rely on food stamps.
She's trying to get me fired up over here. I don't know if you see what's going on here. You may have to sing another song in a minute. I need you to calm my spirit right now. No, I mean, the minimum wage is a poverty wage. There's no question about that. And what it does, it actually creates a perverse incentive where you make the decision where it's actually better for you not to work and deal in the black market economy and get government support. So you actually make the same decision that corporations make. They say, hey, well, if I put some of my money overseas and I can get these corporate benefits from the country, then I can get a double benefit. But that's punished for the lower sex socioeconomic classes, but you get arrested for that sort of activity. But when you do that in the upper echelon level, they for years, every politician has said, oh, we're going to make them come put their money back here, and we're going to chase them down for all their tax evasion. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it? I hear Trump talk about it. I've heard 20 years of presidents talk about it. And it's not happening. It's because money controls a lot of politics.
But if we raise the minimum wage, then we're going to pay more for all these things.
Good.
Okay. Why good? I mean it's going to cost more money.
There's two different ways to approach that. One, that could just be, you know, if I'm making $2 million as an executive, I can make $900,000. That means a lot more people get a chance to get enough to pay for their family to eat and enjoy life, or basic necessities, not even really enjoying life at that point. Or you could say, well, as a country, we can make a decision that I'll pay 10 cents more for my burger, so I know that people don't have to be homeless and on food stamps working three jobs in order to make ends meet. And I think both of those decisions need to be grappled with and embraced for us to really move forward.
Esmeralda, like,
yes.
You can say amen, Esmeralda.
I've never understood when people are like, well, I don't want to pay more. It's like, yeah, but it's not like we're paying for things that we need to help people to do this. I am all for my taxes going to things that need to get paid for. If I have to pay more, that's cool. Just let's hope it gets there. That's all I ask for. And it's not happening.
Well, and when we talk about welfare and we talk about people working at Walmart, actually some of the biggest amounts of money that are spent on food stamps are for people who are on minimum wage, because it's just cheaper for Walmart to say, well, we're going to pay them the minimum that we're required, and that's still not enough for somebody who's supporting a family. So we're actually subsidizing Walmart by paying first food stamps for people who work there.
That's right. We're taking on the duties that corporations should be taking on in terms of taking care of their employees.
How's it going, Kelly? She's like, this is intense.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I get into these arguments with people all the time, and it's here's another one. What about drug testing welfare recipients? That's something that's been passed in other states. I don't want my money going towards somebody who's just going to use it to buy alcohol or drugs.
Well, the thing is, the money is not used to that. And the very small percentage of people who do use drugs to cope or deal with whatever pressures in life, that's not worth the investment to test them. I mean, if we're going to go that route, then we should test all the people at the RNC and DNC and see how many people want to raise their hands and subscribe to that. I think the bottom line is, when you're talking about encroaching on people's life and what they do in their private life, that should not be any sort of bearing on whether or not we give them what they need to eat.
But they don't deserve it. If they're doing drugs, they don't deserve it, Todd.
I think whether people do drugs or not, they deserve to have food on their table. And I think if we believe in this country being what it's supposed to be, being a land of opportunity and giving people the basic necessities for them to, you know, pull themselves up by the quote-unquote bootstraps, you can't do that without allowing food and some sort of income to pay for the basic necessities. Whether people do drugs or not, obviously I'm not condoning it, but I don't want that to be the deterrent that keeps us from making sure that family gets all they need to support themselves. One individual may use drugs, fine, but why should I let that child starve because the mother uses drugs?
You didn't think I was going to put you on the spot so hard, did you?
I didn't. Especially not after the threesome segment. I figured we'd be all downhill from there.
We didn't finish the rules on the threesome. Elif wants to tell me it's time for a break, but we didn't finish all the rules on the threesome. Look at Elif. We also didn't talk about, there's so many things we didn't get to. We didn't talk about Pokemon Go, which I can make a pivot from welfare and drug testing and minimum wage.
That sounds like and still corporate welfare conversation of Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go. Yeah. Did you know that the value of Nintendo went up after obviously this app went crazy. Are you playing Pokemon Go, Kelly?
I'm not playing it, but I do know what it is.
If there's anyone who doesn't know what it is yet, I'm so envious of you. That's a great place. Really, it's a great place to be to not know what Pokemon Go is, but it's a augmented reality app where people can kind of play in their own environment. They can catch these little Pokemon Japanese anime monsters. Esmeralda, are you playing?
Nope.
Nope, me neither. But there have been some drowsies, some Jigglypuffs and Jinx in the studio. So people come by and they catch them from the windows. But the value of Nintendo went through the roof by billions. Mm-hmm. Only now it turns out that it's not actually a Nintendo owned app. So that's going to affect the investments of people. Yeah, I know. It's so crazy. It's kind of like looking for a male escort in Philly. More after this on 7 or Cleveland. More after this on 720 WGN. Wake me up. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Kelly Ahlstrom for our Music Monday. She'll be playing at the Uncommon Ground on July 31st. Really some beautiful music. Where can people find your music online?
They can go to kellyahlstrom.com or soundcloud.com/kellyahlstrom.
Great music. And Todd Belcour is also in the studio with us. He's heading down to Springfield to fight for justice. How's that? Can I say that?
Voting present.
Elif is calling, yes. She'll be calling Senator Tom Cullerton. We're calling a senator.
TC.
Did we call him as TC?
Yeah.
Why is he called VP? Because
I've never heard of that.
John Cullerton, it's his Twitter handle, I believe, is VP Cullerton.
No way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong about that. But I'm a little bit excited about this. We're going to put, let's see, we can put this, can I put it on the air? Let's see, is it ringing?
I'm trying.
Oh, okay. No problem. And so we're calling, I believe he is not at the convention. I think he's still in town. He's running for office. So I don't know if we have to put, if we have to make sure we alert people. Well, he's not, we're not campaigning for him.
By the way, I think his VP means Villa Park.
Yeah, that's right.
Villa Park, Illinois. He's the past president of the village of Villa Park.
Investigative reporting from Esmeralda Leon.
I can Google right there.
Okay, since we're talking about investigative reporting, there was another topic I meant to get to tonight, which was I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but the beaches in Chicago on a blisteringly hot day in the 90s were closed because of the big storms we had Saturday night going into Sunday morning, and Winnetka cannot handle the overflow, so they opened their locks and they dumped sewage into Lake Michigan.
Wait, excuse me?
Is that serious?
Oh, this has been going on since I was a lifeguard on North Avenue. This used to make me so angry because we would have to close the beaches because there were toxic levels of E. coli in the lake.
Why do I feel like this is a metaphor
for
what's happening in the world?
The most underreported.
You mean a poop storm?
It's
a I called the Water Reclamation Center yesterday and left them a message. They called me back, but this will be ongoing. I don't know how Winnetka's poop is our problem. How have they not solved? I mean, and I don't know if that lock system is just for the North Shore. Is that water that's collected for a larger population that they can't handle? This seems like something that needs to be fixed because there's no way on a day like yesterday we should have had to close the beaches, especially because when you think of people who don't have air conditioning, who are
absolutely,
it just makes me angry.
Who runs that part of town?
That's considered, it's part of the Chicagoland Water Reclamation Center.
Well, no, I mean like representative or whatever.
No, there's actually a separate
public official.
It's just for water reclamation.
At the tone, please record
but
your
would
message.
The public officials, when you other than the water
recording,
people know?
You may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Ooh, we are leaving a message for a representative. For senator, not representative. Is that a lateral move or is that a demotion?
No, that's a demotion.
Oh, senator, I apologize. Fix it on the recording. I know you can't. Senator Tom Cullerton.
Star three.
Run
it back.
This is Patty Vasquez, and we have up
Todd
in...
Todd Belcour. What's going on, TC?
Go ahead.
And Kelly Ahlstrom.
And up in traffic.
And Esmeralda Leon.
And Elif, who is in the producer's booth. Hi, Elif.
Hello.
This is our wake-up call for Tom Cullerton. I don't know that... I'm pretty sure we've called him at least once. He's been here for the Budget Crisis Corner, which we're going to rename because they have a temporary budget in place that's only going to last until January. I think we're going to have a new segment called Crisis Corner. Now what?
Segment called Kick the Can Down the Road.
That's too long. Now what? I was just going to call it now what, but can, my husband
can
feels...
Can kicker?
Can kicker?
That's still a little too odd.
I kind of like that. Do you like can kicker, Kelly?
I like that.
Can kicker? Mm-hmm. Esmeralda?
I like now what.
Now what?
Now what?
Right, because isn't that so Chicago, right? Now yeah, what?
Pretty much.
And it's the state of Illinois.
We complain more than any city in the galaxy.
We do, but when bad things happen, we also are kind of like, yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was on stage at Zany's last week, and I was telling the audience there were a lot of tourists in town, and I said, you know, we're not hosting the Olympics, right? And they just kind of laughed. I go, no, we were in the running, but it was decided that we were too violent. And people started laughing because if you, I mean, yes, we have violence. We're not Rio de Janeiro. We are not, yeah, they have mosquitoes that are angry and toxic. Like we are, and comparatively, do you think we would have been okay having the Olympics?
Absolutely.
I think so too.
I mean, the mayor's good at anything. It's good at making sure there's keeping peace in a particular area when it's like politically expedient.
No, but that would have been fine. It's just the mass of people.
Which would have been great.
Ugh.
I would have liked it. But do you think that Mayor Daley would have stayed? I don't think he would have stepped down if we had gotten the Olympics.
No, I think he had stepped down for a slew of reasons.
Interesting. You know something else? I love how you like hinted like more knowledge than the rest of us have. Callie, would you like to have the Olympics here? Wouldn't that have been fun?
It would have been okay, except for, yeah, the traffic, I feel. A lot of people coming in.
You could have rented your place out. You could have Airbnb'd yourself.
I'm telling you, more people on common ground that cheer you on.
Oh, they would have all been at uncommon ground. I'm just saying. And they have you seen some of the photos? I mean, right now, apparently, you cannot use the bathrooms. There, it's the where they're going to do any of the water sports, kayaking and things like that. It's all like sludge. It's all. It's like they opened the locks in Winnetka. Yes.
Didn't that kind of happen in in the Winter Olympics?
In where were they? Was it Beijing?
No, was in
that was summer, wasn't it?
I think it was Russia.
Oh yeah, you're right.
They were still trying to build things and like just as people were coming in.
Oh, wait. Oh, we have somebody calling about the sewage system. Hold on. Tom Cullerton, I know that Senator Cullerton, I know you're still.
We
filled the whole thing. Senator Cullerton, we were talking about all the beaches in Chicago being closed yesterday, Sunday, on one of the hotter days of the summer. They had to be closed because of the huge rainfall on Saturday night. So Winnetka could not handle the overflow. They opened their locks, dumping sewage, including waste and human waste, into the lake, meaning that people could not go swimming. Andy, you have some thoughts on this. Yes, Andy?
Hey, Patty.
Hey.
Love your show always.
Thank you.
I work to it every night.
Thank you.
I have a friend who was the harbor or the yacht club, head of the yacht club in Waukegan, and he used to go out on his boat. And Milwaukee, if it rains 1 inch, they open up their locks and let all the sewage into Lake Michigan. And he could see toilet paper on top of Lake Michigan. And they've done nothing about this. Their sewer system and their sewer water runs together, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
You have reached the maximum time permitted.
One second, Andy.
Message. If you are satisfied
we are satisfied.
Message,
we're all satisfied with this message.
To listen
don't,
to your message.
You don't have to hang up on
to erase and re-record. Press 3.
Yeah, we're fine. Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry. We were just finishing up our message for Senator Cullerton. You were saying that their sewage and their water system run together?
Right, and they empty it 1 inch of water up there, and they empty it into Lake Michigan. And so for all these years, they've been talking about how it's the seagulls and these birds that are...
With toilet paper.
Yeah, they need a deep tunnel. And I mean, everybody's looking to put people to work. How about keeping our water clean? How about a deep tunnel in Milwaukee?
Yeah. And Winnetka, apparently. I don't know how this is still happening. How is this 2016 and we're still dumping human waste into Lake Michigan?
That's a great point, Andy. Thank you for bringing
it
up.
It's ridiculous. Thanks, Patty.
Thanks, Andy. Have a great night.
That bus driver for Dave Matthews Band got into so much trouble. Winnetka needs the same thing to happen to them. Come on.
Well, maybe.
Wait, what happened there?
Oh,
Dave. Remember back, when was that? Like. Early 2000s,
their
tour bus essentially just opened their sewer thing into the over a bridge over here downtown, and it dumped on a bunch of people.
There was a tour boat going underneath the bridge. The tour bus, the Dave Matthews Band, was going over in a bus. They opened their latrine system.
So while,
because they figured they would just dump it into the river, into the Chicago River, thinking, well, they don't.
If Winnetka does it.
Yeah. And some people got.
Apparently, that sort of waste is on the continuum of acceptability.
Yeah.
Some people's waste is all right. Others, I don't know.
Yeah, man, you get mad when a bird goes on you. Imagine, like, I mean, how do
That's
you ever.
To be good luck, though.
But I like how they're blaming the seagulls. We can blame them for a lot of things, yeah. But I don't think there's that many that they can do this.
No. I mean, and the thing is that there are so many things that we put into our bathroom receptacles, into our potties. Can I say potties?
I think that's appropriate.
I think it's appropriate as well.
It's better than blaming the seagulls.
It's way better. Do you ever go swimming at Lake Michigan? Go to the beaches here?
I do, yeah. I did not know.
No, but the city of Chicago will shut it down when there are levels that are dangerous.
Okay.
When I was working at North
Versus
Avenue.
Just levels that are nasty.
Acceptable. there's acceptable levels.
There's nasty.
I swam
nasty
daily.
AF.
For 2 years, I swam pretty much 5 days a week for, 3 months out of the year in Lake Michigan, and I'm fine. I'm totally fine. Totally fine. Absolutely.
Jury's out on that.
Yeah. No, it was, I would swim from North Avenue to the Fullerton Point.
Wow.
And, it was fine. It could have been better. This is excellent.
E. coli has lingering effects.
Yeah. Vic Vaughn is coming up with your news in just a moment. How are you doing, Vic? Yeah, that's our playoff music. That means my show's almost over.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? It's kind of elegant, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
I like that. How have you been, Vic?
Staying out of the water.
There you go.
Did you have that story yesterday? Well, you weren't working.
Well, the beaches actually were open. It was that you just couldn't go in the water. You could go on the beach, though.
What a diplomatic way of putting it. You could walk around on the hot sand.
Shout out to my park district people. Yeah, beaches were open. Just couldn't go in the water. Bad idea to go in the
water. The water was closed. The sand was open.
Not healthy to go in the water at that
point. You go to sandy sidewalks, but not the actual water.
Right.
Todd Belcour, we look forward to having you back in the studio. Safe travels. Are
you
back in town before the end of the week?
No, I should be in Champaign for the Egger Fellowship.
Oh, well, have a great time there then.
Thank you.
And we look forward to having you back in the next week or so.
It'll be
wonderful.
My pleasure.
And Kelly Ahlstrom, look forward to having you as well. Have fun at Uncommon Ground on July 31st. Go see her there. Find her on SoundCloud and iTunes. iTunes or no?
Not iTunes yet.
Go to her GoFundMe page, though. It's Kelly with the EY.
Yes.
And we loved having her on the show.